You are listening to Messenger Insight, a news and information program brought to you by the Baptist Messenger and the Baptist General Convention of Oklahoma.
Hello, I'm Brian Hobbs, host of the Baptist Messenger vidcast. Really thrilled to be joined with Dr. Matthew Arbo, who is assistant professor of theology at Oklahoma Baptist University and author of a new book called Walking Through Infertility. Dr. Arbo, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Now, you are tackling a major topic when you bring up the topic of infertility. And I thought we could begin kind of what prompted you to address this topic at this time.
Yeah. Well, part of it initially was personal. I have some very close family and friends who have experienced infertility. And so walking with them in that for a number of years got me thinking more deeply about it, particularly as a personal experience for them. And then subsequently, a couple of conversations with pastors, one with a former pastor in Kansas City who first kind of got me thinking about the idea of a book. And then some pastoral challenges that came up in our current church that just got me thinking as an elder about infertility, about fertility treatments, and some other stuff. So really, it was a concern of a pastoral care that finally got me to thinking about, you know, conceptualizing the book and thinking about how to help, what sort of pastoral care and pastoral wisdom to offer couples that have that. So first pastoral, and then first personal, and then kind of pastoral.
That's great. And I love the subtitle, Biblical, Theological, and Moral Counsel for Those Who Are Struggling. And, you know, you mention really from the outset of the book, this is a struggle, and you tie it into the biblical accounts we read about. This is a major theme in the Bible. Mm-hmm. You cited a statistic that there's a significant portion of the population that struggle with that. Could you talk about that, some of the background?
Yeah, of course. I was somewhat surprised, actually, in sort of plumbing some of the research here for statistically that. So according to the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, nearly 10% of couples experience some degree of infertility that could be a short period of time or that could be the whole of their marital lives. And they cannot conceive. So there's quite a large, broad spectrum for couples. But my guess is that it's actually a bit higher than that, just because of how these statistics are measured and how they're evaluated and tabulated. So my guess is that actually it's a bit higher, which means that and you just take, you know, your average Baptist church, however many families there are, that means, you know, a significant percentage have or are experiencing infertility. Which means that it's a pastoral challenge really for all churches where there are families at some point or other. Yeah.
And, you know, in today's world, there's a lot of people with a lot of opinions about a lot of things.
Yeah.
And yet you look through and there's very few resources to really speak directly to this issue. What were some of the issues you wanted to be sure to bring up as you went about writing the book?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the chapters kind of correlate to the subtitle. So kind of a sort of chapter on some biblical contours, rehearses some of the narratives. The second chapter kind of offering some broader theological framework and then some moral assessment. And there's a bit more to it than that, but that's kind of a general shape of the book. Well, I mean, one thing initially, sort of taking on one part of the early chapter on biblical narrative, is that infertility happens to be a theme in the Bible. I wouldn't say it's by any means a central theme, but it comes up repeatedly in Genesis, again in Samuel, Luke, right? The final conception of John the Baptist with Elizabeth. So, I mean, these are extraordinary stories, and it happens that in each of them, a child is conceived. And there's a couple of ways that, or a few ways that can be read. One is that God always delivers, but we know that God always delivers, but he may not always provide a child. And that the reasons for providing a child, at least according to the biblical text, is entirely God's prerogative. And that's going to be really tough for some couples to accept for some, I think, obvious reasons. But nevertheless, what's also there in the text is that God cares for the childless, and that he has a special place in his heart for the childless. And it's important not to see childlessness as a kind of punishment necessarily, or as you know, God is sort of turning an eye from them or a face from them, but instead, and this is kind of a central idea of the book, that God's given them for however long a different way of being family. within the church, and so also of participating in God's life and mission.
That's a good word. You know, thinking about the book of Job, how his friends come along with things that are going to help with what they say.
Yeah.
People sometimes come along, those who are struggling with infertility, saying things that they think are going to help. I noticed it was very important for you to have a compassionate and pastoral tone in the book. What are some dynamics there that our listeners could be aware of as they think about this issue for their own family or others?
Yeah, I think that's really important. In talking with family and friends who have experienced infertility, some of the most hurtful things occur to them, not just through the infertility process, that's painful enough, but in what people say. And sometimes they mean well, but they are too detached from the sort of emotional life of that couple, maybe, or that person. Or maybe they just don't know what to say, and so they say the thing that they think will be reassuring, you know. And maybe it's a platitude that they'd heard before, a wives' tale or something like that. And it's not meant to harm or to hurt or to injure the person, you know, the couple. They think it's going to mean well, but it is not. I've heard stories, you know, and this is a common one. Why don't you stop trying so hard, you know, or there's certain dietary changes. And some of that, I mean, has some element of truth. So there's certainly dietary stuff and stylistic stuff. That's sometimes what fertility specialists will recommend. But what most couples need is a listening ear.
Yes.
And a presence, someone willing to hear them out and to say that they're sorry to hear that they're going through that, and that they're there for them, and that they'll pray with them and pray for them. That's really what couples most need, and that's certainly what they need in the church, is someone who will be of encouragement by being present to them first. Without jumping to conclusions about what their situation in life is, but they'll hear them out and be with them in that. And that's what the church is called to in that respect, is to bear with one another in their struggles. And that may mean, you know, further down the line, you know, offering a word of instruction or a word of counsel, but early on it'd be important just to reserve those first judgments. So maybe in the platitudes that we want to offer in a way just to sort of reassure, but that actually can do some harm and cause some additional detachment from that couple. So it's understandable why someone might want to offer some form of encouragement verbally immediately to kind of help, but very often that's not what happens. A couple needs something more, more forbearing and more patient.
Good word. You know, you dived right into some of the reproductive technologies, to borrow a secular term.
Yeah.
I mean, we're living in a brave new world with technologies that maybe previous generations would be shocked to know are really happening.
Yeah.
And you offer kind of a biblical framework, but also you dive into some of those issues. I thought we could talk a moment about probably one of the most noticeable, which would be in vitro fertilization.
Yeah.
And what are some things that Christian couples who are walking through infertility should think about with this IVF issue?
Yeah, that's a hard question. It's a good one. It's a hard one. And that comes in the chapter in the book on sort of moral appraisal of reproduction and reproductive treatment. What typically happens is a couple who have gone for a while, have experienced some prolonged infertility. It could be the year and a half to 2 year mark, something as a sort of typical classification. They'll at least initially go through some initial assessment. They'll through blood, hormonal tests, scans, that sort of thing. And if these assessments tell us anything about their situation, then maybe there'll be some less invasive, less intervening prescription or path forward for them. And some couples, it works. Like these less intervening, less invasive measures do the trick. A change in diet, a change in lifestyle, an outpatient surgery, and then they're able to conceive. That happens quite a lot. There are some couples for whom that doesn't work, and they resort to some more involved, more costly, and more invasive interventions. And one of them is IVF or in vitro fertilization. And the process there is important. We may be able to revisit some of that, but the there's a couple things I say in the book, and it's sort of two parts. One, have some advice for couples who may be thinking about it and have yet not yet embarked on that form of that form of treatment, and then also for a couple that maybe has already embarked on that treatment and who face other kinds of questions about what to do based on that experience. So in the book, I caution against IVF for a few reasons. You want me to go ahead and talk about some of those?
Please.
Yeah. So there's a few reasons I caution against IVF. One is it's important to realize that it's not, in the truest sense, stricter sense of the term, it's not a treatment. It's an option. Because infertility is not a disease. So we're not treating the person. What we're doing in this instance is externalizing the reproductive matter, right? So the wife will donate egg, the husband will donate sperm, and the egg is fertilized in clinic, in glass, hence the language of in vitro fertilization. And a number of embryos are created, and those are stored. They're frozen until the wife comes in for the embryos to be implanted during her fertile cycle. And sometimes multiples will be implanted on the likelihood that that at least one will implant and come to term. And IVF has worked for many couples. For some couples, it still doesn't work. And I should say that there's a lot we don't know and that scientists don't know about all the diverse mechanics, all the reasons why a couple who couldn't conceive does and vice versa. But there's some theological concerns to raise there. One is about the sort of disconnection between procreation and the sexual act between man and woman in marital covenant. That's the way it was designed by God. It has a sort of prescriptive element to it, although it's understandable why a couple might want to have a child of their own and strongly desire one. That seems like a natural human want to have a child of one's own. It would be a mistake to think that one should pursue that course when there are when the means of achieving it are questionable. And so I'll get to that part now. So there's a backstory to IVF, and that is it required clinical research to refine its techniques. And in the refining of those techniques, there was the acceptance of the destruction of hundreds of thousands of embryos, possibly millions. And that was just an acceptance of the practice in order to refine the techniques of IVF, required the destruction of embryos. So there's that backstory. But even if a couple said that that backstory, well, that's already happened. It's nothing I can do about that now. It doesn't affect me morally. There's a couple of other things to consider. One is that there's an enhanced risk to the child. Here's what I mean by that. Any couple that procreates naturally accepts that the child that will be born, that there's risks, there's natural risks in it. We don't know. We procreate, a child is conceived, and we can do some prenatal screening, you can do some ultrasound, but there's a limit to what we know about what the child will be like, what kind of, whether they have darker skin or lighter skin, and brown hair or, you know, lighter hair or whatever. We just don't know. Will they have all their fingers or, you know, will they have any other impairments? We don't know. We risk that. But with IVF, there's acceptance of an enhanced risk because of all the mechanics and the moving of parts and the storage and the personnel. Now, that extra level of risk may be minuscule. It may be very, very small, but it really doesn't matter how much risk there is. It just matters that the parents are willing to accept it. It's just the moral acceptance of that risk, because all the risk is imposed on the child that will be born. You see, it's not imposed on anyone else. And then there's a legitimate question: what happens if a child conceived through IVF does incur some sort of disability? Who's responsible for that? The sort of moral vagueness and opacity there raises some serious questions. And then there's lastly the concern about unintended consequences. We don't know sometimes what will happen. A couple may proceed to have 6 to 7 embryos created, so eggs fertilized in clinic, have them stored, have a few children through that measure, but then conceive naturally and have several children that they didn't expect, you know, in that way. And then they have embryos still frozen in storage, and they don't know that they won't have any more children. That's an example of the kind of unintended consequence where they find themselves having pursued that option and not fully knowing what to do with their children that have been created in lab. You can avoid that by not pursuing it. So I tried to do this in the right kind of tone. It gives the right sort of moral assessment. And so that's why I say I caution against it, because there's also the cost and some other factors that go into it. And there are other ways of becoming parents. We know that parents can foster, they can adopt. And this seems like a lot to go through simply to have a child of one's own progeny, of one's own biological makeup. It's understandable, but it may not be justifiable.
Well, thank you for unpacking that.
Yeah,
a complicated issue, and I know you came about your caution with a humble tone, and you seemed to be trying to raise the issues that people should think about and give them some parameters.
Yes.
In a world that's telling them go, go, go.
Yes.
And try to get to your goal. So I appreciated that. You added some personal stories. There was a couple that talked about throughout the book that brought a human face to all this, and each of us knows someone walking through infertility perhaps, but you ended with an interview. What was that about? And talk about why you wanted to include that, if you could.
So the story woven throughout the book is John and Lizzie, and that's included particularly for readers who may not know anybody personally that's had this experience, or maybe pastoral staff or leaders who haven't had direct experience with family and friends that have had issues with infertility. So they can imagine someone's experience, the kind of tumult that can sometimes involve. So that's the reason for the story. And then the interview was to personalize it in a slightly different way. And that happens to be my brother and sister-in-law, Patrick and Jennifer, who I love very much, and who experienced infertility for quite a long time. And who I was able to hear firsthand the grief and difficulty and hardship and cry with them. And their account in the interview humanized it in a slightly different way. And they're also able to offer themselves some encouragement to readers, help them see things in a slightly different way, no matter really where they are on that sort of spectrum of infertility early on or later on. So, and I think that's important. I think the one of the main themes in the book is to sort of draw this out into the open a little bit, this subject, and to help the church understand more generally that there are a significant number of people among us who have this experience, and it would be good for the church to recognize that and to begin to take it on as a subject, not just of pastoral concern, but of community, of broader church community. We're sharing in life together in important ways, giving and receiving of gifts. And it'd be good if we just had this on our minds as a community more regularly. So partly educational, but partly encouraging. And I think that human element's really important.
Well, it really brought it home to me. And, you know, walking through infertility, it's a new release.
Yeah.
And sometimes people just want to know a book they can recommend if they're asked. And so what is the best way people could get a copy of this now that it's out and on release?
Yeah, so you can get a copy now. The book has been released as of the 30th of June, so I'm glad for that. They're in stock. Yeah. So you can order directly through Crossway's website. That's one way, or you can order through Amazon, and those should be releasing any day if they've not already been distributed. So pre-orders now are over, so you can order there, elsewhere, over your privileged, you know, book ordering website.
Yeah, but yeah. Preferred book. Yeah. That's great. Well, the book is Walking Through Infertility, Biblical, Theological, and Moral Counsel for Those Who Are Struggling. The author is Matthew Arbo, who's assistant professor at Oklahoma Baptist University. Thank you for joining us
thanks for having me on
Vidcast.
I appreciate it.
And we look forward to seeing the response to the book.
Me too.
I know it's going to bless and help a lot of people and families and churches as well. So God bless you, brother.
Thanks. Thanks, brother.
You have been listening to Messenger Insight, brought to you by the Cooperative Program and the Baptist General Convention of Oklahoma. For more, find us in the iTunes Store or visit us at baptistmessenger.com.